Support for Living on Earth comes from listeners like you. To make a donation, please use the link to the left of this webpage. And thanks.
A few years ago, novelist and journalist Will Self decided to take a walk. He walked from South London, where he lives, to the Lower East Side of New York City. Oh, he took a plane, all right, from Heathrow to JFK, but Will Self walked from city to airport and airport to city, practicing what's called psychogeography. Will Self may be the world's foremost practitioner of psychogeography. In fact, today he may be one of its only practitioners. In his latest book, he invites you to meander with him. It's called Psychogeography, Disentangling the Modern Conundrum of Psyche in Place. The book's a collection of essays about Will Self's wandering by footmobile. Will Self joins us from the BBC studios in London. Will, it's good to have you on the show.
How do you do?
You're in a BBC studio in London, right?
Yes, I am. Indeed.
Did you walk there?
I did. I did walk here. I would have cycled, but I have a new dog, and the dog needed to walk.
How far is it?
Ooh, it can't be much more than a mile and a half, something like that.
Oh, so that's just the walk around the block for you.
Mm-hmm.
So what is psychogeography?
Well, the term derives from the French situationists, and specifically from a man called Guy Debord. And he said that, you know, modern society is a kind of spectacle, and specifically modern cities are defined, and we start to see them as a function of our human geography, where we eat, where we sleep, where we buy, where we go to work, and we can no longer see them for what they are. So his idea was that psychogeography would in some way deconstruct the urban environment. We'd start to see cities for what they really are again, rather than what the powers that be want us to see them.
And the major tool of the psychogeographer would be their feet.
Absolutely. I mean, Debord and the original situationists used to practice what they called the dérive, which basically consisted of, you know, meeting up at the Parc de Beauchemin in the north of Paris, buying a few cheap bottles of red wine, getting drunk and drifting down to the Ile de la Cité in the Seine, where they'd sleep it off.
Well, how does walking to an airport, getting on a plane and then walking from the airport to the city, how does that illustrate what psychogeography is about?
Well, it does it in many, many different ways. I mean, I've walked from my home in central London to Heathrow Airport on three occasions now. And I think the first time I did it, I had the definite sensation that I was undertaking an act of exploration more profound probably than anybody can do anywhere in the world, in the sense that I was taking a journey using a means for that journey that probably nobody had done since the industrial era. And yet I was traveling the same kind of route, roughly, that tens of thousands, of hundreds of thousands, of millions of people make every year. So there's this marvelous sense that one gets of being cut off from the great mass of humanity in this very, very simple, very self-directed way. You don't need any equipment. You don't need any fancy accessories. You can just get out of your chair and do it, and you're instantly exploring in that way. You're finding out new things about your environment. The business of what I call the airport walks goes further, though, because the most curious sensation I had on when I walked to Manhattan, and as you said in your introduction, I walked to Heathrow, flew to JFK, and then walked from JFK through East New York, through Brooklyn, over the Brooklyn Bridge, and into the Lower East Side of Manhattan. Well, when I got to my hotel in Manhattan, you know, the body, I think this is kind of aspect of evolutionary psychology, the body's conception of space is stronger than the mental conception of space. So that 3,500-mile plane flight was as nothing compared to those two full days of walking. So my body was telling me that I had been walking on a continuous landmass. My body was telling me that the Thames estuary had been rammed into Long Island in a kind of unholy miscegenation of continents. And the body was far stronger than the mind. I really thought, wow, I've walked the whole way here. And that for me was a marvelous and epiphanic moment that was incredibly destructive of this life that I've led, and I think a lot of us have led, where we're catapulted about the globe in these aluminum and titanium tubes, and we're traveling all over the place, and yet we don't really know where we are.
It's interesting, on airplanes now, on the backs of the seat in front of you, you can see a map, and you see yourself traveling virtually over this place, but for all intents and purposes, you're just in this hermetically sealed airplane.
Yes, and I think it's a virtuality. I mean, everything about modern flight, which I've expatiated on elsewhere in that book, is in fact designed to make the experience boring and dull. It's designed to virtualize it within a corporate environment. You know, there's no reason why they couldn't put much bigger windows in planes. There's no reason why the stewards and stewardesses shouldn't wear, you know, Ride of the Valkyrie helmets, and the captain shouldn't shout over the PA, "Wee," as you take off. You know, they don't want you to be excited. They don't want you to know where you are. And in a sense, nobody really wants to know where you are or wants you to know where you are. You know, people who travel for business especially may go to many different cities in a year, and apart from a tiny little grid of streets around their hotel, they'll have no real sense of orientation.
This line jumped at me, actually, and I was surprised to read it. You write that the place chooses you. It's not so much that you choose a place.
I'm not sure whether I mean that literally, but what I think I do mean is that, again, we live in a culture where place is sold to you. You know, that we're kind of accessorized by place. People say, "Oh, I went to X or I went to Y, or the beaches are fabulous at Z, or they've got fantastic ethnic jewelry in P, and why don't you go to M?" You know, they're products. Places are products, and travel magazines and travel journalism is by and large a catalogue of these products that's sold to us. And people acquire place as they might acquire any other object in that way. You know, their memory, their digital cameras, you know, they're loaded up with these vignettes of place, just as any collector might show you their Sèvres pottery or their beer labels or whatever it is they collect. And I think that, you know, in order to have a profound relationship with place, again, coming back to this idea of kind of knowing where you are, you have to look for those places that choose you in that way and say, you know, you're not going to be here for a day or so or a couple of days. You're going to have an evolving, perhaps a lifetime relationship with me. I'm a place that you want to know about. And I think, you know, for all of us who think about the world and who think about our place in it, that's true. That has a resonance. And when I look back over my own life, I mean, you know, a couple of the places that I've come to think of as kind of my places over the years, I didn't even like them when I went there. It wasn't about liking. It wasn't necessarily about having a good time. There was something more profound going on there.
Can you experience or practice psychogeography on a bicycle?
Well, bicycles are interesting intermediate technologies. I use a bicycle all the time. That's how I tend to get around in London. I think that the problem for the psychogeographer is that there is something about walking. It is my absolutely preferred method of investigating place. I think it slows one down. I think walking has, it wasn't me who coined this idea, but I think it might even have been Rousseau. I think walking has the pace of thought in that way. It has the 4-4 rhythm. It has a strophe and an antistrophe in that way. And I think there's something about that. I find when I get on a cycle, I tend to fall victim to wanting to get from A to B.
Seems to me that if you're walking to airports and getting on planes, you must be traveling pretty light.
Well, yeah, I mean, when I was in North America last year, I was away for two and a half weeks, and I didn't take anything at all. That was a bit extreme, and I did that as a conceit in a way. I was interested in this idea of our relationship with material possessions, and you know, you go into airports and you see people with 22 sets of matching Sensomite luggage, and you kind of think to yourself, or I do, you know, what's going on here? Are they taking like all their pence to Paraguay? Is it to show their pence to Paraguay or Paraguay to their pence? There's something kind of going on here with this movement of chattels. So I was kind of reacting against that. But, you know, even ordinarily, I've been well below a standard carry-on bag for years now.
Where's your next walk going to take you, Will?
Well, the coast of East Yorkshire in England is the fastest eroding coastline in Europe. It erodes 2 meters every year. So it should be possible, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on which way you look at it, for me to take this walk down the east coast of Yorkshire, knowing that nobody will ever be able to take that walk again, that by the time next year comes, that bit of land will have gone.
Well, Will, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
It's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
Will Self's new book is Psychogeography, Disentangling the Modern Conundrum of Psyche and Place. It features 50 illustrations by gonzo graphic artist Ralph Steadman. On the next Living on Earth, Thor She Blows.
You understand your place in the wild world when you study whales. You know, we all think it's all about humanity, and yet you get out on the ocean with some of these whales, eyes the size of a grapefruit, little wrinkles, and they're looking at you saying, you know, you're an intelligent species, look at my lifestyle.
Whales and the fate of the oceans, next time on Living on Earth.